course, I've got another bathroom, but there's a question that arose. I'd like to read something. The difference between, the topic was the difference between Vaidhi Bhakti and Raghunatha Bhakti, which are two aspects of Sadhana Bhakti. So what is the result of Vaidhi Bhakti and what is the result of Raghunatha Bhakti? There's a quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad 22, that's Mahaprabhu's talks with Sanatana Goswami. Text 153. The first word here is lobha, or sometimes called greed, mentioned in Vajra devotion, sometimes translated as covetousness. Lobhe Vajra Vasira Bhade Kere Anugati Shasta Yukti Nahi Mani Raga Nirdhara Prakriti. Translation: if one follows in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, out of such transcendental lobha or covetousness, he does not care for the injunctions or reasonings of Shastra. That is the way of spontaneous love. The word Braja, Vasira Bhave, or in the mood of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, Braja, are significant. Only the residents of Brajadham have love for Krishna, which is free from any conception of his greatness or almightiness. The residents of Mathura, Dwaraka, and the Vaikuntha planets have love mixed with awe and veneration. Since awe and veneration is the specific characteristic of Vaidhi Bhakti, the Braja residents alone are truly Ragatnikas, and those who follow in their footsteps the actual Raganugas.
Bhava, or ecstatic love for the Lord, is certainly aroused both from Vaidhi and Raga.
This was a question you asked.
But that arising from Raga is stronger,
as confirmed in the 7th chapter of Madhurya Kundalini, that's by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and this is being quoted.
Bhava arising from Raga Nuga Bhakti being greater in its strength and natural feeling, with the predominance of feeling that the Lord is on an equal level, and a distaste for seeing the Lord as the Almighty Master, is very thick and intense. The second type of bhava arising from Vaidhi Bhakti being somewhat lesser in strength and somewhat lesser in natural feeling, with the type of possessiveness of the Lord mixed with the perception of the Lord as the Almighty God, is not so condensed. Those two types of bhava are tasted in two different ways, in two types of hearts, possessing two types of spiritual desires, in two types of devotees, unquote. That was Madhurya Kundalini. And here's another quote from Madhyalila chapter 8, text 232-31. I'll skip the Bengali. Unless one follows in the footsteps of the gopis, he cannot attain the service of the lotus feet of Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj. If one is overcome by knowledge of the Lord's opulence, he cannot attain the Lord's lotus feet, even though he is engaged in devotional service. The unspoken example in this connection is the goddess of fortune, who worshipped Lord Krishna in order to attain his pastimes in Vrindavan. However, due to her opulent lifestyle, she could not attain the service of Krishna in Vrindavan, unquote. And more, further quote. One can worship Lakshmi Narayan by the process of Vidhi Marg, worshipping the Lord with regulative principles according to the instructions of the Shastra and the spiritual master. However, the Supreme Personality Godhead, Radha Krishna, cannot be directly worshipped by this process. The dealings between Radha and Krishna and the gopis are devoid of the opulences of Lakshmi Narayan. The process of Vidhi Marg, following the regulative principles, is utilized in worship of Lakshmi Narayan, whereas the process of spontaneous service, following in the footsteps of the gopis, who are denizens of Vrindavan, is transcendentally more advanced and is the process whereby Radha and Krishna are worshipped. One cannot attain this elevated position while worshipping the Lord in his opulence. Those attracted by the conjugal love between Radha and Krishna must follow in the footsteps of the gopis. Only then is it possible to enter into the Lord's service in Goloka Vrindavan and directly associate with Radha and Krishna, unquote. So, I don't want to spend a lot of time. I just wanted to bring that up for clarification. If someone, Akiladar, or anybody wants to discuss this after class, I'll be glad to. Nice topic. So, because of the amount of ground that we covered yesterday and all of what we have to cover, I'm going to try to make 2 days into one. Some of you received a handout sheet yesterday, like 5 or 6 pages photocopied. Some more will become sailing in the room in the course of our, they were supposed to be here, but
more copies
will be available. And what you'll receive, if you didn't get one, is a description. One page is half of the timeline from Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, etc. It gives definitions, all spelled out. So I don't think we need to repeat everything that says there. But I would like to go through, because our topic is sadhana bhakti, improving sadhana bhakti. We have to understand what is sadhana bhakti. How does the term sadhana bhakti apply to these terms of faith or shraddha, or obviously bhajana kriya? Where does the role of sadhu come in, and so on? So we'll just mention some of the descriptions that have come from our Vaishnava acharyas. We'll start with the statements made by Bhaktivinoda Thakur on the topic of shraddha or faith. He has given a description that the same word, shraddha, you can describe in 4 different stages, which have specific qualities. So, the very beginning of that shraddha, he says, is something that's intrinsic to the soul. And everybody has it, the soul within the tree, within the bird, within atheist, has a natural inclination for God, some acknowledgement in God's existence. So some seed of that is there. As the soul is there, faith is there. Arjuna asks this question of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita: what if someone doesn't have faith in you? So the chapter is their divisions in faith. They'll have faith in something else, because it's something of the soul. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, the next kind of faith is that which develops as a result of agyata sukriti, or unknowingly doing something that is meritorious or beneficial for the development of faith. So this is one place where the role of sadhu comes. Sadhu is one in sadhana bhakti,
and developing sadhana bhakti, the role of the sadhu is very important. Because even if one unknowingly happens to intersect the life, happens to bump into a sadhu, then anything done favorable for that person helps in their development of agyata sukriti, or unknowingly performing something beneficial. That's the second stage of that faith. When some stage of agyata sukriti furthers, then that accumulation of agyata sukriti in Bhaktivinoda Thakura's description allows or fosters that even a moment's association with a devotee or a saintly person to the point where that person will take up they favor that association. They take up the benefit of that association in a practical way, exhibited by taking up some kind of devotional practices. So another stage of that development of that faith is when shelter in that person is taken up to absolute shelter in that person, signified by the process or the event of initiation. More than the event, the ongoing submission to that spiritual master, and developing all the way to nishtha, which is one of the stages in this timeline. Steady faith, the point at which faith is not broken, or no longer soft and pliable faith.
So are
there
Sanskrit terms for this intrinsic
base faith? He calls it svatak, svatha, shraddha, or self-inherent. S-V-A-T-A-H with a dot under the H.
And the third one?
I don't know. The Sanskrit term. Yes?
By this description by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how Agyata Sukriti is so related to Sadhu Sangha and then taking shelter, that it sounds like Bhajana Kriya and initiative. So, at least up to that point, all these other stages of Sadhana Bhakti are different concentrations of faith.
Yes.
Does that continue?
It goes up to the attainment of prema. If there's one chapter in Nectar Devotion, qualifications for devotional service, where Rupa Goswami analyzes, and it comes just before Raghunuga Bhakti. Chapter 14 is devotional qualifications. Chapter 15 is Raghunuga Bhakti. Spontaneous devotion. So the question is raised, what's the qualification for engaging in Vaidhi Bhakti? And the answer is sincerity only. Or you could say also, they're not a one-to-one exchange of terms, but faith. So I'm going to mention something that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says about the two aspects of faith. We're describing them in a timeline, but yes, Shraddha can, even before devotional service begins, exists, and as it is nourished, it can take one to the final stage of prema. Shraddha alone. Shraddha means, with faith I take up devotional practices, etc. So you can look at the whole process of the stages of devotional service as the stages of development of Shraddha.
Okay.
also. Is that your question? Yeah. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Shraddha has two aspects. Just as mentioned, this preliminary faith is that God exists, I exist in relation with God, I have an eternal relationship with God. And scriptures reveal the existence of God. Some tendency, innate tendency, to have faith in the directions coming from God. So the other aspect of faith, which is very important, it has to do with Day 2's topic, that is effort. And that is a willingness to act according to those conclusions of the scripture. In other words, simply having faith or giving lip service is not sufficient to qualify as one who is possessing faith. So another way you could say, following what Acharya was indicating, is this idea of applying oneself to the directions coming from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. The whole continuum of advancement up to prema can be described in those terms. In fact, when we look at Bhajana Kriya and Anartha Nivritti and Nishtha, it looks like that's what we're talking about. Faith, and particularly how one acts in accordance with the vidhi, vidhis, the rules and regulations. So the role of, that's something on the role of faith. What is faith and what's the role of faith? So then sadhu, just like it's described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Harinam Chintamani on the offense of sadhu ninda, the reasoning he gives, or Haridas Thakur gives, why it's the most perilous thing to do to make an offense to a Vaishnava, is because it's the Vaishnava who's carrying forward the mercy of Krishna, the giver of the mercy of the holy name and the message of the holy name and the holy name. So one makes offense, then one cuts oneself off from the mercy of the holy name. Even you may be chanting, but offending a Vaishnava. So this, the sadhu, there's a nice description of this in the commentary in Nectar of Devotion, and also in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Madhurya Kandambini, where the 24 qualities of a Vaishnava are listed, and 23 of them are considered to be marginal characteristics or marginal qualities, and one is considered to be the principal quality, and from the principal quality the others come. Anyone know what the principal quality of a Vaishnava is? You agree with him? Tim?
I remember it was called being sheltered in which you
can receive. Right. Just the same. Giving oneself fully in service to Krishna, heart and soul. This is the principal characteristic. So, again, as far as sadhu sangha, you could say, the development of, on the whole timeline of devotional service, it's the development of that principal characteristic of what is a sadhu. So we're saying, by definition, a sadhu is a devotee of Krishna. And that characteristic is what's being developed through the process or through the sadhana of sadhana bhakti, through the means of sadhana bhakti. That's being nourished. So one gets the, one moves further along the stages of bhakti by sadhu sangha. Just like we're all gathered here. This is a very good opportunity. There's other opportunities. It's not like people who aren't here are not getting any sadhu sangha. But this is a very good opportunity for sadhu sangha. Very nourishing for one's creeper of bhakti. And one should appreciate that, the association of persons who can, in their association, strengthen our faith and strengthen our access to the mercy of Krishna. And in that company, then, one of the comments is this sadhu sangha principle also carries on and on and on up to the higher stages. It's not that after some preliminary stage is accomplished, that's all I need to concern myself with as far as sadhu sangha. Or as though as persons are advancing, the opposite is true. More and more and more one is eager to keep that company. You hear the descriptions of the Goswamis of Vrindavan who would regularly, for hours every day, simply sit together and discuss topics about Krishna. Chaitanya Charitamrita is filled with those kinds of descriptions. So you could say in the beginning is something of a passive event. Perhaps somebody went looking for a spiritual master or a spiritual teaching, or to some degree that's there. To some degree also it's like an accidental event or a passive event. But this lobha or transcendental enthusiasm or eagerness is the symptom, you'll see as we discuss this more, of advancing. So our topic for day two is what's the role of effort from our side that we have to bring into the practice of sadhana bhakti in order to make improvements in our sadhana bhakti or make improvements in our Krishna consciousness. And in short, it has everything to do with it. So now when we look at the next two stages and covering ground quickly, you have those sheets, you can get more detail. Bhajana Kriya and Anartha Nivritti, at least from my seeing what is written by our acharyas, they fit almost like hand and glove. One is Bhajana Kriya is emphasizing on the lower end a kind of slackness or kind of intermittent performance of devotional practices, gradually working up to an unbroken execution of devotional practices. So the lower end is slackness or nishtita is the term, slackness in devotional practice. And then on the upper end is steadiness or rigidness in devotional practice. Once Prabhupada was asked, what is the best way to make advancement in Krishna consciousness? And Prabhupada's answer was, along the line of Vidhimarg, to follow all the rules and regulations very carefully, even the little ones. So this is the anishtita, which is it sounds very much like, but it's not the same term as nishtha, because there's another big stage in between. The big stage in between is anartha nivritti. So the way it's described by our acharyas is, in the company of sadhus, under their direction, one engages in devotional practices, in the beginning in kinds of unsteadiness. It gives five characteristics of unsteadiness. I'll just mention them quickly. The first is, compared to a schoolboy who gets his primer and in the first week of school thinks he's learned everything. He's all fired up and learns his lessons very well. And so that kind of utsahamayi is the term. That kind of zeal in the immature stage either
quickly or over some time, slowly, peters out. Following that is Ghana Tarala, which means thick and thin, or on and off, vacillating. In bursts, one will very enthusiastically engage in devotional activities. Then some period of vacation or slackness. And then again, picking up. And then again. And this way it goes on in stages. A kind of a stage where there's unlimited speculation. We've all encountered either others or our own mind in that state of consideration. There's a slackness in devotional practice in this case because it's all excessive mental activity, and as a result, the devotional practices suffer. Should I go to Vrindavan and live there with all the great devotees and just give up my worldly trips, my household affairs or my things and my just, or maybe better that I stay in my natural position, and great Vaishnavas have also performed this way and this is the safe route, and I can also make nice advancement that way as a nice example. But on the other hand, this is, so we can, you know, the statement, misery loves company. So when we experience these things, it's nice to know everyone who's gone through the path of sadhana bhakti, they also took a look at these stages. Some stay longer in these stages than others. So in this way, the unsteadiness in devotional practice is gradually replaced by complete fixity in devotional practice. So that's the emphasis in this stage of Bhajana Kriya. And then, even if one is very carefully, vigorously, conscientiously engaging in devotional practices, one may not have the full taste or the stage of devotional practice that comes after this anartha nivritti stage. It's using our metaphor, seeing the direct light of the sun, because there's some cloud or mist that's covering the direct sunlight. Yeah?
It seems as if these various different stages, Shraddha, Sarasanga, Bhajan Kriya, etc., that seems that it's not exactly a, like one goes to one and finishes and goes to the other.
No.
I know somebody who's sort of not even, and it's all kind of mixed together. You know, it's not really.
It's not, they're. It's a timeline, but it's not a cubicle.
Right. There seems like people who haven't quite successfully completed one portion here, but are exhibiting the symptoms, or specifically the Bhagavad Gita, and difficulties, you know, the different ways and such.
Yeah.
But they haven't even, they're still back there somewhere too.
Right. Still struggling with how to right, have proper association in regard to, yeah. I can think of some people like that. As, now that you mention it. So, yeah, these stages are to be understood like that. It's a continuum and they are stages. It's not that it's amorphous, although one does blend over into that. I was going to comment like this, that Bhajana Kriya, Paladananda Swami has taught this course for 1 month, what I'm doing in, you know, half an hour from this. In that case, it's a kind of selfishness, and it's not in a more elevated stage if I actually want Krishna. I want to stop suffering.
And anartha nivritti goes all the way to bhava. There are still residues of anarthas, even in the ruchi and asakti stage. They're finally completely eradicated. Anarthas are completely eradicated when there's arising of bhava. So it's not like I'll the material idea. I'll do my work and then I'll take my vacation. Bhoga then tyaga. Anartha nivritti is a continuous thing up to even, that means even including Raghunuga Bhakti stage. Raghunuga Bhakti, we won't try to say where it begins, but the sadhana stage certainly is complete when bhava arises. That is to say, one will follow rules and regulations. One will continue on with the activities of cultivation of raga anuga. But one will do so completely spontaneously. Not with the, your trainer wheels are now gone.
I'm hoping I'm jumping ahead, but why would one have these different problems with Prajna Kriya, different variations? Is these the result of anarthas? Like there are different descriptions here.
Well, there are five descriptions of Vajna Kriya, and they're describing relative assiduous practices and slackened practices, or the vacillation between the two in different stages of Vajna Kriya. And to answer your question directly, in the Anartha Nivritti stage, there are four characteristics. One of those four is Anishtita Vajna Kriya, the unsteadiness. There are three other causes of anartha. Anartha means a cloud that's blocking my vision from the direct light of the sun, using the metaphor. So when I'm engaging in my devotional practices and there's some slackness in those practices themselves, that's an anartha.
So in a sense, the difficulties in the Vajna Kriya are sort of getting right up.
Yeah, it gets a little to like tie all the little cross lines from one to the other, gets a little messy. So yeah, so that's I'll try to follow through as our acharyas have. For my mind makes it simpler to see what their categories of anarthas. So as one takes up, and we've all taken up devotional practices. I mean, imagine if you knew that, you know, to get from here back to Boston, there are four different things that you could do wrong so that you won't get back to Boston. You'd certainly want to know what those four things are. So one of them is an unsteadiness in devotional practice to reach the stage of what sadhana bhakti is meant to do for you. So one has to be very conscientious in those stages, in my performance of bhajan, or hearing and chanting activities, hearing and chanting, etc., the nine processes of direct devotional service. So there's an effort there in devotional practice. And then there's three others, categories. They're very simple. tendencies that are within me due to past sinful activities. And then there's also tendencies to try to enjoy my past pious activities. And the third is anarthas that arise from the performance of devotional service itself. Offenses. And there's two categories of offenses. Offenses in the worship of the deity, or seva aparad, offenses in chanting or Namaparad. Included in Namaparad is offenses to devotees, Vaishnavaparad, etc. The 10 offenses are there. Guru Aparad, offending the scripture, and so on. So Seva Aparad and Nama Aparad. It doesn't mention offenses in to be avoided in the holy dham or dham aparad. That which is directly Krishna, when you approach Krishna in your devotional activity, you can make offenses. And the consequence of those offenses is ananarta, or some, that which clouds your directly perceiving Krishna, even though you're dealing directly with Krishna. So, starting the lists, I'm not sure how to use the time best, the lists there for those anartas that are arising due to our past sinful activities, there's a sublist of those and identifies kleshas, 5 different kinds of kleshas. You can look at the list when you have it. I won't identify them all. But we spoke yesterday, this is just a reminder, that through sadhana bhakti, 2 specific perfections can be achieved in devotional service, just from the stage of sadhana. And that is kleshagni, or the destruction of miseries, kleshas. We've heard this term, adhyatmaka klesha, adhidaivaka klesha, adhibhautaka klesha, the threefold miseries of material existence. Miseries or kleshas. So kleshas or sufferings are destroyed by sadhana bhakti. And it's done, it's not at once, but it's progressive, just like the mist. When sunlight comes, the fog may be driven away. It's dissipated. I want to refer to something here in Bhagavad Gita, that's also a verse that also appears in Nectar of Devotion, where this is described. You can take note and just look it up later. It's in the purport of chapter 9, text 2. In chapter 9, text 2, purport, a verse is quoted from Padma Purana that also appears in Nectar of Devotion, where there are 4 types of sinful reactions that result in suffering or misery are described. It starts with a prarabdha. So reactions to past misdeeds, past sins, that they're just lurking around the corner. They haven't started to harass you yet, but they're getting ready. Then another is kutam. That means the whole stockpile, the big mess. Bija, the seeds, and palon mukham means they're sprouting, soon to pounce, soon to blossom. Kame naiva praliyeta. Praliyeta means dissolved, destroyed. Vishnu bhakti vatat manam. So if you recall from Nectar Devotion, the way Prabhupada has presented this verse as he says that there are 4 different stages of seeds of past misdeeds, and they're all destroyed by uttama bhakti, pure devotional service. That means even in the sadhana stage, these kleshas or miseries are taken care of. One doesn't need to pay to make a special payment. Take care of those miseries. Engage in your devotional practices and be assured this is the best means. Not only ones that are presently disturbing you, all the other ones also that are not yet disturbing you, and they will. or were you to not be engaged in devotional service, they would make up your whole life. So this is the first of the anarthas, the sufferings and miseries and how we would otherwise be absorbed, completely dedicated to reacting to our misery, dissolved, permeata by devotional service, by bhajana kriya, stage of sadhana bhakti. Next is the activities of one's past, where great piety has been performed, the tendency to try to be the enjoyer of that piety, the fruit of that piety. That's another anartha. And then the offenses in the discharge of bhajana kriya or devotional service itself. So consider, our today's topic was supposed to be, I'm just kind of abbreviating the discussion, the topic was the significance of effort made in sadhana bhakti. But here's a question. If we have worked very carefully on our devotional practices, is it that the anarthas are just going to kind of on their own go away, dissipate, dissolve, stop bothering you, or something else has to take place? Oh, it's stretching. Radhikaran is scratching. Yeah. Here we go.
Bye-bye. Purification of the consciousness by hearing from Krishna, from God, this is a transformation of the consciousness where you're able to deal.
You give me a yes or a no.
Krishna
Kripa?
I would say yes if you don't commit any offenses.
Prampurad disagrees and wants to say, what do you say? He's going to think about it. Mahendrani?
I say yes, something else has to take place, so we have to make a very conscious, extreme effort to get rid of the anarchy.
Can you think of any scriptural reference to support that statement? Think about it. What about if one continuously commits offenses in the chanting of the holy name? One can chant the holy name for hundreds of lifetimes and not get the full effect. But then on the other hand, if one is in Harinam Chintamani, if one is guilty of a particular offense, what's the remedy of that offense? Sometimes it's mentioned, chant constantly. This is bhajana kriya. Uninterruptedly, don't look to the left or to the right. Just chant, chant, chant. And then? Go ahead. Yes.
Well, then it will be taken care of. But what I was thinking is that for you to be able to chant constantly, you have to be very much blocking out.
That's right.
The interruptions that come and back.
And also the desire to remove that anartha that was the cause of that particular offense. You want to do that. I mean, both. What you just said is you have to be very, very careful or conscientious to prevent the influence of that distraction. Are you wondering?
Maharaj, do not see that all the anarchists we have, the offenses, and all pious existed, or impious existed, because we identify ourselves as the body.
Right.
Because the soul itself is the one after the offense. Just like for the sun, there's no gain on earth.
Okay, one of the, in the, do you have one of those papers that I passed around? Okay. In the category of anarthas due to past sins, the first two first one deals with accepting the self to be the body, avidya. No, asmita is that one, and avidya is to accept something as eternal which isn't eternal. Some philosophers accept the mind. I'm just listening to Sariputta tape, and in modern philosophy or Western philosophy, that which is subtle they take to be eternal, some philosophers. So the mind they think is the self. So that's another kind of ignorance, or has another category. But that's according to our topic here, Vaishnav statements, Gaudiya Vaishnav statements, is that's one of the sufferings one has to endure as a result of past sinful activities that can be eradicated by devotional service directly. Jiva Goswami?
Wasn't your question that it's only the identification with the body, or the body which has these anarthas and makes offenses, and indeed the soul itself cannot make any offenses? Or any other questions?
The soul can't make any offenses. Is that what your point was?
The sun is not day or night.
Right, that's for the sun, but we're a little spark.
If the soul is complete full of knowledge, the eternality, so if someone realizes who he is, then it's complete, you know.
Right, but how do we get that the sadhana to realize who we are is what we're talking about, devotional practices.
We're marginal
and we're tiny. What? Say it again. That's correct. Anyway, this is one of your and tininess. And another point that I want to touch on here is how the process of removal of anatta works. I mean, it has everything to do with the question I asked, that is effort. But it's not effort alone. Effort has to be there, but it's not effort alone. I can try to lift something that's heavier than I have the capacity to lift, and it's not that it's going to go flying up in the air unless I make some effort, but there's some mercy factor also that's involved. Effort certainly has to be exerted. I'm going to read from Bhagavad Gita to substantiate this statement. Yeah, that exactly. There are two verses in chapter 2. One is text 49 and the other is text 50. Durena hyavaram karma bodhi yoga dhananjaya. Avaram karma means nasty karmas, undesirable, abominable activity. How do you get rid of that? Like our topic of how do you get rid of anarthas, how do you get rid of the tendency for something abominable due to past abominable acts? Buddhau shananam anvichcha. Anvichcha means trying, making an effort. Shananam is surrender, and anvichcha is trying for it. It doesn't just happen. The next verse, tasmat yogaya yujasva, same as satesham satata yukkanam, similar root. There's an effort. As Prabhupada translates, therefore strive for yoga, which is the art of all work. So in this process of linking with Krishna, because Krishna dissipates as the cloud, as the cloud is formed by the power of the sun, the cloud is also dissipated by the power of the sun. Or another example of this is in Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami treats extensively the verses from the 7th chapter of First Canto, where Vyasadeva has the vision of the personality of Godhead, with Maya standing behind. So in that, in those few short verses, Jiva Goswami pulls out all kinds of things. And he discusses that Vyasadeva's vision is to see the totality of existence. The external energy, the internal energy, the marginal energy, the Supreme Lord, the controller of both. And the external energy is under the full control of the Lord. So our effort, the devotional service, is not different than Krishna. So by making some bhajana kriya, that effort is, let me associate with that internal energy of the Lord. As you were saying, also. And we are also spiritual energy, chit. Although tiny, we're chit, potency. But our making endeavor is also under Krishna's control, in that the external energy may be blocking, even we're engaging. When Krishna sees that the living entity is qualified, then Maya stands behind and one can see the Lord directly. Otherwise the cloud will still interfere. Even I'm engaged in all the things, I'm doing all the do's and not doing all the don'ts, and being real sincere about it, and continuing like that, still the mercy is necessary. But effort is absolutely required. Some other examples are there's a reference here I'd like to read from the second canto, chapter 10. This chapter 10 is a response to the questions of Brahma to Lord Vishnu that resulted in the Chatur Sloki of the Bhagavatam. But Brahma wanted to understand how the energies of the Lord are working. As much as one could, as Brahma directly asked, how is it that your form is all spiritual, and from something all spiritual something material is coming? You're regularly asking this question. If we're all spiritual, how are we engaged in Maya? So it's answered very nicely here. This is chapter 10, texts 41. Text 41. According to the different modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and darkness, there are different living creatures, who are known as demigods, human beings, and hellish, as goodness, passion, and ignorance. O King, even a particle, even a particular mode of nature, being mixed with the other two, is divided into three. Right, got it? One may be prominent, the other two are also present. So even where one's prominent, the other two are there, mixed. And thus each kind of living creature is influenced by other modes and acquires its habits also. So in the purport, Prabhupada discusses this verse, Sangat Sanjayate Kama, where by one's association, one not only acquires the modes of nature ascribed to that particular mode, although one may be prominent, one starts performing activities according to that mode. In that way, forms, behaviors, and so on diversify unlimitedly due to sangha, or the association. That which we are not, namely matter, we're not matter, we're associating with matter through the agency of false ego, or as you said, misuse of free will. We willingly misidentify ourselves with that which we are not, although we're spiritual. And the process of sadhana bhakti is to simultaneously move toward that which we are, or that which we are part of, namely Krishna, through specific regulative activities of expressing our devotion for Krishna, at the same time dealing with the fact that for so long we've been doing the opposite, turning our attention away from Krishna, and then misidentifying ourselves with matter. And that's what the clouds are. Whether it's in goodness or auspicious activities, pious activities, or sinful activities. And now the third category of anatta is even in the course of our devotional practices, we're still carrying a material conception, and therefore there are offenses in our worship of the deity and our chanting of the holy name. And that foolishness also leads to unsteadiness or slackness in our devotional practices. Even we know that we should be very careful in that regard. So this Bhajana Kriya, just to repeat something said earlier, carries through the end of Ananta Devritti. We have to be very conscientiously work on keeping our devotional practices proper and improved continuously in their regularity and in the attentiveness. Time is escaping once again. There's a very nice statement made by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami, where he's describing the nine stages of devotional activity, and he says, amongst all of these, one of them is most important, chanting of the holy name. And in the chanting of the holy name, as far as our effort is concerned, this topic for today, most important place to place your effort is in attentiveness, because attentiveness is the root. Inattentiveness is the root of the other offenses. So the effort to chant qualitatively, chant and chant qualitatively, and specifically to chant with full attention. And with this effort, then so many other efforts, not only just, you know, going along for the ride or cashing in on how nicely you chanted attentively, but so many other efforts will follow of improving your devotional practices for someone who is progressing in spiritual life. So the necessity for effort doesn't diminish as one progresses along the timeline of Sanatana Bhakti. And when Bhava Bhakti arises, effort will be there without restraint. There's at the upper end of Ananta Devritti, even after the four categories of Anantas are removed, it says that you still have some more to go. And the essence of this has to do with starts with laya, which means laziness. When there's opportunity for hearing, attendance comes at times, if not more than at times, a kind of drowsiness starts to take over. So somebody says it's prasadam time. When someone calls your name, they want to have a conversation. But in the stage of nishtha, all of that is that cloudiness is gone. And from that stage of, and when I'm done, you know, the paragraphs and pages and just skipping. So and that stage of nishtha, one can gradually, the stage is described, kind of like what Jiva Goswami said, it's not like a, you know, was exactly beginning, exactly end. It's not a cubicle, it's a stage. And from that stage of nishtha, taste, unlike, however nice it may have been for the practitioner, the son of the bhakti, as he's trying to remove the darkness, a whole other taste comes. And attracting even more intense.